You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dehati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, Ed Stetzer here. We've got the newchurches.com podcast and having conversations today with a couple of guests I'm going to introduce in just a moment. One of the things that is, if you're a church planner, you've experienced this, it's really sometimes confusing and challenging about how to have friendships with people on your team. Now, that might seem strange because there's a whole school of thought that says you shouldn't, that pastors shouldn't be friends with members of the congregation. It complicates things. And on the other hand, there's a whole school of thought that thinks that's a horrendous statement that I just made. And so we want to talk about what that looks like with church planting team members. I was just talking to Donna, my wife, about this the other day, because we talk about in church planting how when people leave and they planted the church with you, and inevitably people leave one way or the other, they die or they move or they just decide to go to another church. I mean, you've done life together, and that is hard. And so we're going to talk some about why it's important for church planters to have real life-giving friendships, lean on others when the going gets tough. However, friendships with team and staff members, that's going to be more complex. We're going to talk about that, how to discuss the complexities with others, we're going to talk about cultivating friendships and members with your church planning team. I have two guests today, and I'm going to introduce them in just a second, but I want you to get to know them a little bit. And first, Adam, if you don't mind, introduce yourself and tell folks where you're serving currently now.
Hey, Ed. Great to be with you. My name's Adam Matassib, and I'm one of the pastors at Redemption City Church in Baltimore City.
Awesome. And we're super glad you're here. You grew up in a Muslim family and converted to faith in Christ as a teenager, and really since then had an interest in church planting. And so we're excited to have you here on the podcast as well. You also are married to Sherry and have three boys. Kathy? Brief introduction of yourself.
Good morning, Ed. I presently work for the North American Mission Board, And my assignment is to lead the spouse development team that works in the Send Network church planning arm. So I've been there for 10 years, and I work particularly with planning spouses.
Okay, 10 years. I didn't realize it was that long. I remember when you started. That's crazy. Kathy is married to Ed, lead pastor of Redemption Church in Mobile. And they have six children and 11 grandchildren together between them. And so we are so glad both of you are here. And so let's talk some about this. Because it's a complicated reality. But let me mention about Kathy, though. If you're a church planner, I want to tell you about a book that could help your spouse, right? It's Five Habits of a Healthy. Our guest today, Kathy, and her team have put this book together. And it's full of wisdom for church planning spouses. The link to download the book can be found in the show notes of this episode. Okay, Kathy, quick start with you. You've been serving in ministry in different roles, ministry leader yourself. You've been pastor's wife. Cautions on, or maybe exhortations on how deeply you form friendships with those serving on your team?
Well, I do a lot of speaking, and I'm in my advancing years, as you know, Ed, and I always talk about this file that I have, the things I learned the hard way file. And I think that some of the things I've learned the hard way about friendships have really made me more wise and more cautious, more understanding. But it leaves me with this idea that we have to have friends on our team. We have to have our friends, have friends in the church. But my own spiritual maturity and wisdom has a lot to do with how those friendships turn out in the end. And it takes a lot of maturity to have friends that will last for a long time. And so I would say that it's imperative that leaders, that we have friends on our team.
Yeah, tricky to do though. And that's what I want to talk about. And we're going to go back and forth with both guests today. Adam, you're newer at this. Kathy and I are seasoned, I believe the word that Kathy used. You're newer at this. You know, you've been serving in ministry. You've been on this journey. What advice would you give church planters about and their families about how to forge friendships with teammates in the church planning process?
Well, I certainly think there's biblical precedent that the people you work with in church planning aren't just your friends, but they're your family. I mean, in John 15, Jesus says to his disciples, "You're no longer my servants, you're my friends." And if Jesus can say that about some messed up disciples, then I probably can say that about the people I plant a church with. And if you read Romans 16, which is like this amazing theological epistle, you know, at the very end of Romans, this Romans 16 chapter is really an acknowledgement from Paul to all his friends in the ministry. He calls out all these people and greets them, like, "Greet the beloved Priscilla and Aquila." He calls Priscilla Prissa, like with a nickname. And he says, "My fellow workers in Christ Jesus," things like that over and over again. My beloved friends is essentially the theme of Romans 16. Like, all these people Paul planted church with were his buddies, not just buddies, friends. So I don't know how we plant churches biblically without treating the people on our teams as family. That being said, there's a lot of challenges that arise with that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the complexity, is how do you do that? You know, there's an article Will Wilmon wrote years ago, and it's, well, the title is "Naked Preachers Are Distracting." And how much do you reveal? How much do you, because I mean, the reality is how do you kind of walk through this authenticity, which is necessary for friendship and community, when at the same time, your role is to lead? And Kathy, what exhortations would you have for people in the level of authenticity and more?
No, I think we need to be vulnerable. And you know, one of my favorite definitions of vulnerability comes from Paula Reinhart, where she says, "Vulnerability is a risk we take for a greater good." And so the greater good is, you know, transparency and opening up our heart and building closer team and just being human as a leader and open up your heart. But inherently in that definition is some risk, because either their poor character or my poor character at some point can mess that up. And that's why I say, I think my own spiritual maturity has helped me over through the years as it's grown. I've been able to have more healthy, consistent friendships because I wasn't messing them up with poor character or expecting too much from them. And I need their prayers. I need their support. I don't need them to know all the details of any issue, because that's where it gets into a problem with vulnerability. If I tell too much to a teammate that puts someone else in bad light, then I'm kind of besmirching somebody else's character. There's where sin can enter into it.
Yeah, I will add too that for me, having friends in the church, which I do, and I really believe that matters, particularly the elders and leaders, we have a deep community. But having friends in the church doesn't mean that I share the business of the church in that particular friendship.
That's right.
So I would say that when I'm looking for advice or venting or being frustrated or more, I think that's going to be something outside. So it takes some maturity to not share everything with everybody. And I would even say, when Donna and me, I'll give you an example. I know that I'm going to have a conflict with somebody in the church. And if I come home and tell Donna all about the conflict, I also know that I'm inevitably going to reconcile, in all likelihood, with that person. And then I'm going to forget to tell about the reconciliation. So all that Donna gets to hear is the conflicted part. So there is a maturity in not sharing everything with everybody. But I also think there's a maturity and wisdom in being in community with people as well. Adam, again, as you're on this church planning journey, I mean, there's like an esprit de corps, you know, just we're in this together. We're planting a church. We're a team. So how did you, as you're walking about this plant, how did you do this? You've been urban church planning like you're doing in Baltimore. I mean, it's a challenge, right? You get close with your fellow soldiers, much talk of war around the world even today. So what are some of the challenges that arise when church planners and their families forge close friendships with those on the team, and how do you handle those?
Oh, there are a lot. I think, so We need to start with the realization that these folks I'm working with to plant this church are not my employees. They're not, you know, pawns in my chess game to build my platform. These are my family members on mission with me together. But what inevitably happens is you're trying to accomplish a goal, right? And if you're the lead planner, you are challenging and pushing these family members to accomplish something with you. And it's very hard to challenge and push and help people grow and simultaneously say, I love you at the same time. There's a reason Michael Jordan had no friends on the Bulls. There's a reason Steve Jobs was really hard to work with, because they pushed and pushed and pushed and challenged and challenged, but they did so much that they burned the people that worked with them, though they were geniuses and incredible what they did. And I think our challenge is, how do we help develop church planners? How do we help develop staff? How do we help develop teams and departments within the church and say, hey, this isn't good enough right now, but I still love you? And that's really hard in our culture today, because I think a lot of people are pushing back towards, you know, an abusive type of leadership. And so any type of clarity or like, hey, this isn't where we need to be, people can tend to run away from. So that's one big challenge I've faced. And along with that, like, just disagreements along the way, value disagreements, decision disagreements, you know, like in Acts 15, it says that Paul and Barnabas had a sharp disagreement because Barnabas wanted to bring his family member, John Mark. And Paul's like, hey, one of the requirements to be on mission with us is you don't bail on the team. And John Mark already did that. And Paul's like, if we're going to do this, we're not going to bring John Mark, Barnabas. And Barnabas is like, sorry, I can't do that. And I just think that's crazy. Like, it's in the Bible that two godly men broke up. And many scholars believe they never talked again after that. Like, saw each other in person after that. And I think there just needs to be a category of, like, two godly. I mean, think about this. How do you break up with Barnabas the encourager? How do you have a disagreement with Barnabas? And Paul broke up with him. They stopped working together. So I just got to recognize, like, sometimes we're going to disagree enough where we're going to end up going different directions, and that's okay. That's okay. We'll hang out again in heaven. And we need to be willing to be pushed by those who lead us, but also we need to push in a way that says, I love you, and actually care about the people we work with. So it's quite a challenge, but it's a challenge that's worth it. One other thing I want to add is, I heard Ray Ortland say one time, and this always stuck with me, is he said, you can be impressive or you can be known. Choose. You can be impressive or you can be known. Choose which one you want. And I don't know about you guys, but I've chosen, like, I'd rather be known. I'd rather have friends. I'd rather have family on the team. And I can only keep up this facade of I'm amazing for so long until people see how broken I really am. And I so badly want the hero of my ministry to be Jesus, not me. And I think a lot of times we can try to convince people in our ministries that we're the hero. But if we allow the people in our teams to be our family and our friends, I think we got to reveal to them, like, I'm just as broken as everyone else. But I have a good enough savior to cover my brokenness just like you do. And I think that kind of ministry over the long term actually makes more of an impact.
Okay, Adam, helpful. Thank you. Talk to us, Kathy, a little bit about the whole thing about favoritism. Because, I mean, this is a real thing, is that people, well, the pastor really likes this group. Or maybe, I remember when I was a young pastor, some of the older people say, well, the pastor only hangs around with the younger people. So how do you avoid partiality, favoritism? Is it possible to have those kind of close friendships without the perception of favoritism? How do you do that?
I don't think you can make that problem go away with anybody, with your entire staff, family, or anything else. I don't think you make it completely go away. We have a lot of young staff, Ed, and there's a need for us to be around them uniquely. And we have two different campuses, and you have to have a lot of intentionality to step into their lives and really keep share DNA of, you know, off the stage kind of life together, what that looks like, marriage topics, family topics. And so I think that as leaders, we need to be very well aware of showing partiality. There's no doubt about that at all. But we can't make all the time stuff come out equal always. We have some staff that are near our age. They don't need our input as much as our younger staff. we're investing in the next generation. And that's pretty important to the longevity of their ministry, but also the leadership at our church. So we can't make it go away. And when the finger pointing comes, you just have to find a quick explanation of that spiritual need over there.
Yeah,
be
makes sense.
Think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So take it though to the place where we're having a conversation with church members. Take it back to the time. I know you guys are at a large church now, but take it back to the time early on. What advice would you have to a young church planning couple about the kind of relationships that they should have?
With the people in their church?
Yeah, people in the church, and maybe even outside of that as well.
Yeah. No, I just think that we set an example of what it means to live in community. And even friendships outside the church, Ed, when I was younger, that wasn't seemed as valuable as it is now. Yeah. But if we don't have the capacity to build relationships outside of our congregation, we're probably not reaching our community very well. And so those examples are really powerful. If our church members see us at dinner someplace with someone that owns a local business that doesn't go to our church, that's a good example of us working hard to not just swim in the pool of the church family all the time. And I think that's missional living. That's a whole nother topic. I think that's important as well.
Okay, so Kathy, good. And but let me follow up, because I have been stung by this. And again, it could have been my own immaturity. I think I really appreciate how you articulated that a minute ago. But for me, it was hard to think in terms, and Rick Warren actually told me once that you have to think of pastoring as pastoring a parade. People come into the parade and are there for a while, then they leave the parade. But I got to tell you, whenever somebody left the parade that we were super close to, I mean, that was hard. So how do I guard my heart? I mean, in a sense, it's a series of people coming and the joy that comes and then the leaving and the hurt that comes. How do I guard my heart but not close my heart on that journey?
Well, I'm going to talk about this from that perspective of longevity now, just a second, because I can look back at and see how faithful God was to give us those relationships. To my former husband, Rick, and I, when we were in Denver, there were people that came into our lives. Most of them stayed, but the ones that left, it didn't diminish the value that they gave us while they were there. And they helped shape us in that time and in that season. And I appreciate that now as I look back on it. And now when I see where we are in this day of our life, I appreciate the friends. And another thing too, Ed, all of our friends don't do the same thing for us. We have a set of friends here that I call, they're our play friends. They come over, we don't talk about anything serious. We play cards, we watch sports, we eat great food. And I think there are friends that enter our lives at different levels. And those people that help you get a break, they can end up being just as important as the ones that pray for us, because sometimes pastors don't play very well. Mm-hmm. And so, but I think the long game is how we need to see those relationships. And I can look back. I can't protect every friendship and make it last forever. And there's seasons that those people come back into your life. You've seen that too. A friendship that was broken, that God restored, and it was really sweet. And you saw the hand of God on that, and you saw the big picture. And so I would encourage younger leaders to not, I was crushed over a loss of a friendship in my late 20s. But 10 years later, God restored that friendship in a way that I didn't see coming. And it proved to be very vital to me again. And so I know there's going to be some wounds. We don't have to deny that. But just have confidence that God's got somebody else or something else. And also that relationship could be repaired in the future.
So how do you, when, like you mentioned, that relationship in your 20s and, when somebody leaves the church for whatever reason, it doesn't have to be a bad reason all the time. Sometimes it is. Sometimes they want to go a different direction, and you have this close relationship. It seems hard to continue to maintain the relationship in the same way when you just living life together. It's kind of like, you see each other every day in school when you're in high school. That's where your friends will be. So how do you maintain or not maintain a relationship when somebody leaves the church? In this case, most of our folks would be church plants. When they leave the church plant, do you seek to maintain that friendship? How do you navigate that?
You know what? I don't think that's all the same either. I think there's some people that walk away from our church that we just don't ever see again for lots of different reasons, not necessarily out of conflict, but let's be honest, planning families don't have the bandwidth to go get the sheep that walked into somebody else's field, you know? Right. And so, but I do think we have to keep our heart open, because if we remain bitter, the bitterness issue and unforgiveness is more important than really restoring a friendship. And so there's no, I've noticed that my heart is not as prone to be bitter about those kind of losses, and spiritual maturity helps that. And I know that people come into our life and people come out of our life as leaders. And some of that's the sovereign hand of God. And we have to rest in that. We can't chase everybody down. But yeah, there's some times that reconciliation, those kind of conversations are really necessary.
Good deal. Super, super conversation today with Adam and Kathy. Thankful for your input, both of you, into church planters. This is an area that a lot of church planters sort of struggle. And I even probably, you can tell from my own conversation, I don't think I ever get over that. I mean, there's still people that leave. And I think we have to find a way for those goodbyes to be, sometimes they're gospel goodbyes. You're going on to do another gospel work. Sometimes they're hard conversations. But at the same time, that vulnerability and that transparency really does matter. It's going to be a balance different for everybody based on their personality and more. Hey, listen, thanks again for listening to the New Churches podcast. If this is helpful to you, as always, leave a note, like, share, all those things you do where you download your podcast so more people can find out what we're doing and engage in the conversation as well. You've heard us talk about the Church Planting Masterclass before, 80-session video course that's totally free on newchurches.com. We recently dropped two more sections to the masterclass, one on engaging the lost, people don't know Christ, in your community, and the other on vision with conversations like Mark Middleberg, James Hobson, and others. And of course, I have the privilege of being part of that as well. TED Talk style videos get to the heart of what you need to know as you plant churches. Check out the masterclass for free. That's right. Partnership with the Send Network for free at newchurches.com.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.